11 o'clock hour, Cody and Gold here on a Tuesday. We'll get to the trash of the day in 20 minutes. I promise not to bring up anything personal with you today.
Yeah, leave me out of this.
After yesterday.
That race was rigged.
Uh-huh.
So I'll see you in 2025.
So I will not go there, I promise, today. A little bit later on in the show, we are excited to have Nate Taylor join us in studio, our Chiefs insider from The Athletic. He'll be in studio in the 1 o'clock hour. A lot to get into with him. Ask him a little bit about the same question we posed to you guys with Kingsley and Wanye, plus how he sees the backfield going and the rest of the AFC, which is what we're going to talk about right now. It is only 3 weeks. Understand that. I think the next couple of weeks will tell us a ton more about the Buffalo Bills, knowing that they have the Ravens and Texans coming up. But through 3 weeks, it's the teams you have on your schedule, the teams you have played. Have to admit, the Buffalo Bills look pretty damn good. Josh Allen in particular looks really, really good. It's early, but he has played better than any other quarterback in the league right now. And we don't have to panic and get all sensitive about this. Last night, I even sent out a tweet and said, hey, at halftime, I was like, hey, Josh Allen's going to be the MVP favorite. And I got multiple people that said,
he should be.
LOL, it's week three. He's not going to win. He's the favorite right now. We know this can change, but right now it's a fact that Josh Allen is playing better football than any other quarterback in the league. We'll see if that's the case in week 10. We'll certainly see if that's the case come playoff time. But right now, Josh Allen looks phenomenal. We've seen this before from the Bills early on in the season, so let's see. But they look really, really good. And yeah, the schedule's been soft. They played a Dolphins team that isn't very good, that Tua got hurt late in the game, although I would say the Bills beat up on the Dolphins before Tua got hurt. And then they just beat up on a bad Jags team, and the week one was against the Cardinals team that's improved, but I don't think a playoff team. So keep that in perspective, but the Chiefs and Bills are the class of the AFC, and it's not close right now.
I think the Ravens deserve to be in that conversation.
The Ravens.
I know that they lost to the Raiders. I've gone back and forth on them a little bit. I do think the Ravens are one of the better teams in the AFC. Cincinnati's the only one who exited that conversation after their 0-3 start. Josh Allen, so a couple things can be simultaneously true. Josh Allen consistently, I think, every time, like, this conversation is as dumb as the one where people try to crown someone above Patrick Mahomes. Stop trying to pretend like anyone else is the second best quarterback in the NFL, not named Josh Allen. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL. That is not a story or a conversation or an argument that I am willing even to have. I think you're a stupid person if you make an argument that Patrick Mahomes is not the best quarterback in the NFL. I'm getting to that point with Josh Allen as the second best. He has consistently proven it. And before you're like, well, he's never gone to an AFC title game. Okay, so you're going to, or a Super Bowl. So you're going to make me choose some other quarterback over Josh Allen as the second best because they won one more football game once? No, thanks.
We did our preseason rankings. Josh Allen was 2 to me based off of being available as well. That's a big part of the equation.
He's the second best quarterback in the NFL. But simultaneously, I do not care what the Bills do in September. They are the most thump on a team by 30 points September team ever. I actually looked it up. I looked up Josh Allen's stats. He is so much better in September than almost any other time of year, except for the end of the year, actually, funny enough. He is 20-7 with 6,800 passing yards and 52 touchdowns week 1 through 4 in his career. Only 36, 5 through 8, only 39 weeks, 9 through 12, 45 in the final 13 weeks and beyond. He typically is quite a bit, but you got to remember, for the last 2 years, that includes it's included an extra game. He is better in September and better at the end of the year. It does not tell you what they'll do in January. January is a different monster for them. This is how the Bills play every year. They're great in September. They're mediocre the next 2 months. And then in the final month, they look like, oh, this is the year they're going to get the Chiefs. And then poor old Charlie Brown gets the football pulled away from him.
No,
so until otherwise,
you.
It's like the Bills play exactly the same.
I hear you. I'm not saying they're winning the Super Bowl all of a sudden, Cody.
Yeah.
I just think what we've seen play across the NFL, and it's 3 weeks in, and right now their quarterback is playing better than any other quarterback. Someone said maybe Sam Darnold. Okay, I'll listen to that argument a little bit. But to your point about let's see it play out, I definitely want to see it play out for Sam Darnold. At least Josh Allen, I know there's a baseline of what I'm getting from a guy that has had plenty of success already. Very impressed. To me, they, of course, have to prove it against the Ravens and Texans, and that'll tell us a lot. If all of a sudden Josh Allen looks like crap against those two teams, it's a different conversation. But if they're still undefeated going through the Ravens and Texans, like, I think we have to acknowledge that for the first time in 2 years. I know last year Jake Browning got hurt, so since he was a little bit different story.
Ravens were the main competitor
last
year.
Yeah, but it'll be the first time in 2 years where I think we will be saying much of the year. Maybe it's Chiefs and Bills again. And I'll be honest, I like the chances for the Chiefs in that scenario because the Bills haven't beat them in the postseason. But right now, it's fine to it is okay to acknowledge, Josh Allen's performance right now has been really impressive while also knowing that the schedule's been soft. Both are true.
Yes, I completely agree. I don't think that anything outside of that is inaccurate. But what's funny is because the Bills have done this before, my bigger takeaway last night is the other thing that I'm going to think that makes you crazy is there should be no one left on the side that Trevor Lawrence is good. There should be no one left on the side that Trevor Lawrence has a chance to be an elite quarterback. If you were still on that stance, it is time to eject. You know, I've been off that for years.
You have?
I've been off it for years, but like, I'm welcome to the side of there is no one left on this planet. It should be like, Trevor Lawrence got elite skills. He does not. He does not have elite numbers. He does not have elite winning ability. Nothing about his game is elite. He is mediocre. He is below average. Man, won one playoff game to the Chargers, another team that chokes all the time. And we try to pretend like maybe he had it for a minute. He looked bad last night. Ugh.
Before the season, I went back real quick as you were talking to see what the number. Before the season, like most people, certainly we did on the show, like, hey, well, who do we view as top 10, top 12, whatever. I had him as the 11th best quarterback entering the season. Right now, if I were to redo it, he's like 19th or 20th. I mean, and that's with a year where there's been a lot of bad quarterback play. It's bizarre. I was listening to the broadcast last night. It was Dan Orlovsky, Lewis Riddick were part of the call, part of the doubleheader. So they were the secondary crew, if you will. And it's the third quarter, early fourth quarter. And Orlovsky's saying things that we would say, guys, about a first or second year quarterback. Remember, Trevor Lawrence just got a roughly, $300 million contract this offseason from the Jags. And Orlovsky's talking out there like, I would show the tape to Trevor about the third quarter. Tell him this is who he is, and this is what he needs to find a way to harness. And all this, like, this is the kind of crap we talked about with guys that are rookies, with guys that are second year quarterbacks. You already signed the check for $300 million, and yet we're saying that we're evaluating him like, well, he just needs to find a way to harness that third quarter. This guy's been in the league for 4 or 5 years and has got a massive contract already. So, unfortunately, we know how this plays out. The quarterback's not going anywhere. Doug Peterson will be who ultimately pays the price.
Do you think he makes it through week 17?
They have to at least win two. What is their schedule? I think I was looking at it last night. They don't let him make it through if he doesn't win two of the next five, I think it is, or whatever. I was like, they can't be 0-7 or 0-6. So they play the Texans.
There's 0-5.
Colts, I still think it's a toss-up game. Then the Bears, then the Patriots, and the Packers. During those 4 or 5 games, they have to win 2 or 3 of them.
Yeah, if for Doug Peterson to not get canned.
I'm not saying they're doing anything this season.
Just to survive.
Yeah, like, it's really bad. I mean, they went out and paid Gabe Davis, and Gabe Davis, I haven't seen an update. He looked really distraught. He was hurt. I think they walked him towards the locker room late. So Gabe Davis was one of their big offseason acquisitions. I don't know his status. Travis Etienne looks like an overrated football player. We all hyped him up. Their backup, Tank Bigsby, might be more effective than Etienne. I think Brian Thomas Jr., the rookie, is really, really good. But they just don't. I mean, it's going to ultimately be coaching that ends up paying the sacrifice. Doug Peterson is not going to be the head coach of that team next year.
Did you see the side-by-side graphic last night? His career numbers look like Daniel Jones's. Like, I mean, at this point, like, what is the, like, if you're on the, no, it's going to work out for Trevor Lawrence eventually, and it's just, it's the coach that's holding him back. Even with a bad coach, man, I think, and I do think that circumstances matter and all those things. Doug Peterson's not Nathaniel Hackett.
No.
Like, his career year to this point, Trevor Lawrence's best year was 4,113 yards, 25 touchdowns, and 8 picks. That's an average quarterback. That was his best year. That's when he went gangbusters. Outside of that, worse. He's been worse.
I think the thought
every
at the time,
other time worse.
The thought at the time was, okay, he put together that season. Yeah. There's another level to his game, and there hasn't been. We have not seen that next level. And I don't know if it'll ever happen in the NFL. You and I have talked a ton over the years about paying quarterbacks, not paying quarterbacks, the dilemma that exists within that.
And I would be a more than any other NFL team is, but it's not my job either, so it's different.
Sure. Yeah.
I would let a lot more people go than other NFL teams do.
Fair enough. But it's tough because we know coaches and GMs don't get 7 years to just
figure
it out.
It's not my job on the line.
But I do wonder, will we ever reach a point where GMs, and I guess ownership as well, look and say, hey, you know what? We agree. This guy is not awful. He's like the 19th best quarterback, 15th best quarterback. We're just not going to pay him. We know that there's a chance that we may not be able to get that quality of play for a year. We're willing to roll the dice because we know he's not the one. That is a really difficult thing to do. It sounds easier than it is. Will we ever see it get to that point? Because right now, no team is doing that. Everybody's paying the quarterback. And I get why they're doing it, but Trevor Lawrence might be the next example of why that's a problem. And he's not going to be the last, and he's certainly not the first. Tua is a little more complicated because of the injury stuff, but same thing applies to him. I get why they paid him. I would have paid him as well. I really would have if I was the GM of the team. From the outside, yeah, you're like, I don't think he's one of those top five, top 10 guys.
It's harder when it's your job.
It's really tough, man.
I just think at some point, I think somebody will kind of make that decision, but you don't see it very often. Then sometimes it burns you. Sometimes you're Washington and you let Kirk Cousins go and you're like, damn it.
Fair.
We'd have been so much better if we had Kirk Cousins for the last 8 years than everything we've been rolling out at quarterback. So it's kind of a mix. Speaking of quarterback play, which local team would you guys like to start
with? Let's start with the Missouri Tigers. They're undefeated. They're the only undefeated of the locals. They're the only team right now that looks like they're headed to a college football playoff.
So,
and they still have the tough games coming up, but still Missouri's squeaking out wins. This is not very Missouri-like. You would admit, normally we talk about Missouri like, bad luck Mizzou. They're living right now, two games in a row, specifically this last one against Vandy. Sometimes we just talk about with the Chiefs. You know what? Good team, special seasons,
you find ways to win.
You find ways to win, and that's what the Missouri Tigers have done. They're still undefeated. Close one against Vandy. I don't think you should be feeling bad if you're a Tigers fan at all.
In the 100 years of Missouri football before this, Missouri loses that game on Saturday. Every time. 100% of the time, every time. They lose the overtime game that really shouldn't matter, but is absolutely going to burn their chances at a college football playoff spot down the road. It's the game they can't lose because the games are coming up and they won it. So like, I will give Missouri credit. I still think they have a problem where I don't think Drinkwitz is a plus in late game situations.
Yeah,
I think Drinkwitz, and this happens in college a lot, I think Drinkwitz is a way better recruiter than he is a coach. I actually don't think the nuts and bolts, the game planning part of it, I don't think that's Drinkwitz's strength. They just have more talent than most teams, so they can go out and they can win the game against Vandy because our players are better than your players, and we're going to win based on that. But I'm not going to fault Missouri. Wins are wins in the SEC. You got to overtime. I think in their history, they lose that game a lot, so kudos to them. Good win.
I hear in the coaching aspect, I don't even know if it's game planning. Is it just truly like clock management in late game decision making and how they before halftime or late in the game.
Yeah.
That's where it's been an issue for them. And if you're playing a better team, it's going to bite you in the ass at some point. But you just keep surviving and advancing, man. That's all that matters. If you're the Missouri Tigers, we know this is all about getting in the college football playoff. They got A&M, they got Oklahoma and Alabama still on the schedule. They don't have to win all those. We said you couldn't have afforded a loss to Vandy. Then you're in big trouble.
Then you have
trouble.
To win at least two of those. Now you only have to win one of those.
You still have the wiggle room if you're the Missouri Tigers. You still do. On the flip side, let's go to two of the other locals that both lost over the weekend.
Okay. So the least bad I'd say was it's hard because the closer game was Kansas, but that's the more embarrassing loss. I would say K-State, they ran into a problem where their redshirt freshman quarterback looked like a redshirt freshman quarterback. They played a half of football that was competitive, and they were in it, but they didn't come through in the big moments when they needed to get in the end zone. And then they just got boat raced in the second half by, I think, a better team. And Avery Johnson looked offbeat for the whole second half of that game. I still think they're going to win 9 games. I still think K-State's a very good football team, but they let BYU kick their ass in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what BYU does the rest of the way. They're undefeated. They are better than people thought. It's also a really tough place to play. Out west, late game, altitude, unbelievable environment. I think that was really impressive to see for the first time in Big 12 play. I think for anybody that maybe didn't watch much BYU football prior to this season in Big 12 country, the question for K-State will be now with the way the rest of the Big 12 is shaping up. I mean, Utah looks like they're clearly the team to beat, and they don't even have a healthy quarterback. The rest of the Big 12, they're beating up on each other. It doesn't look all that impressive. Like if you were trying to make a case about the Big 12 being the third best conference or whatever, it's not been good so far to start the season, but it's it's not the end of it for Kansas State. I still think we go back to something all three of us discussed, Drew, a couple weeks ago as well. And I don't know, I'm sure you have on your podcast. I don't believe they're getting the most out of Avery Johnson. And I think I put a lot of that on the coaches. Yes, he made a lot of mistakes, but I think they're protecting him too much in terms of worrying about him getting hurt. Unleash the kid. They did it in the second half against Arizona, and they saw good results. But they made way too many mistakes overall.
Just let his athleticism shine, you know?
I think BYU came in as one of the best teams in the country in terms of points allowed, and they did a good job of limiting Avery's running ability. But it's because they put him in minus situations. Mm-hmm. Like, they'd run the ball with DJ Giddens, or Avery Johnson would run it. They'd get 1 or 2 yards, and then they're behind the sticks. It's not even the second half to me. It's the first half. They're up 6-3. DJ Giddens fumbles the ball with a minute left. They return it for a touchdown. Very next drive, Avery Johnson throws a pick. They score a touchdown again. It's 17-6. Halftime is done. Avery Johnson throws another pick. They score. Then they punt on the punt return. Video game-like touchdown where the ball goes through the guy's hands. He runs all the way around the field. They score. In the matter of 5 game time minutes,
it's just unraveled.
It went
quickly
from 6-3 to 28-6. It was just a complete disaster for 5 minutes. And yeah, I mean, I don't think this is one of those games where you just say, you know what, we sucked on Oklahoma State. They can still go 10-2, make it to the Big 12 title
game this weekend,
and they go. Yeah, I think this is going to be a big one. And I wonder, I don't know if BYU was a trap game. That's one of the things I talked about in the podcast.
They're
maybe
a good team.
Maybe you're looking ahead. Maybe you're like, it's BYU. They're undefeated. I haven't really played anybody yet. And maybe it was a little bit of a trap game. They kind of got punched in the mouth. But they, I'm looking for a response, I think, in this one against Oklahoma State. Play a little bit angry after that, the way that game ended.
Then let's go to the Jayhawks, who dropped another one. They've lost to Illinois. They've lost to UNLV. They've lost to West Virginia. We mentioned the repercussions of a loss at West Virginia long term with the stadium, with everything that's going on there. And now it's reality.
Cancel the season. It's over.
This team, if they could have salvaged a win against West Virginia, I felt like maybe they could still be bowl eligible. I don't see the path for them to get there.
They're not even a bowl team now.
I don't believe they are, Cody. It's not. There's enough games, of course, to get there. But look at how they're playing. If you're trying to be overly optimistic, you would say, hey, they had a 90%+ win probability in the second half of all three losses. They were up 11 with 5 minutes to go. Yeah, that's actually scarier for me, as in they're not a well-coached team, that they have been in position to win multiple games. Illinois, who's turning out to be a better team, but yeah. UNLV, who knows? West Virginia, I don't think is all that good. And yet you had a lead with 5 minutes to go by 11. After a long weather delay, which actually some people are using as an excuse. No, both teams had the long delay. Should have won that game. Now you get a TCU team that they both stink. It's a coin flip game on Saturday at Arrowhead where the crowd is going to be empty. I will be one of the poor, brave souls there.
Oh, you're
going?
Wait. Mayo, what do you mean?
It's part of the bachelor party. It's a must.
It's going to be part of a bachelor party.
We have a suite. Which they might be giving us the rest
sweet?
Of the they might just give us the rest of the season the suite.
You guys
at this
bought
point.
A suite?
We have a suite for the bachelor party, and at this point, I wonder if they'll just say, "Please take it the rest of the year." They might.
I think I'm going to take the optimist take. Is what you take from this is the Illinois loss is not nearly as bad as it was, and you were winning the football game. It's mistakes. It's the defense not being able to make a stop in the West Virginia game. It's the defense not being able to make a stop in the Illinois game and give your team more time to go back and score. It's the interceptions. Like, it's a lot of things that they haven't. It's an execution thing.
Right, but isn't that who they are now, right? I mean, Drew, like, this. I'm honestly not trying to pick on you with the Cincinnati, but, like, you were kind of saying the same thing about Cincinnati. At some point, the results are the results, man. You just aren't a good football team, and
agreed,
that, to me, applies to Kansas as well.
But it's, to me, it's not, I don't think they're a great football team regardless, but it's an execution thing that's making them.
They should have been a bowl team.
They could easily be 4-0 in this, and the conversation is completely different. It's not, but I don't think them jumping over the hurdle isn't as far away as it seems, where you're just making mistakes in moments that matter most. Like, that's an execution thing. It's Jalen Daniels needing to not throw the ball 90 miles an hour every time and have some touch on the football. It's Jeff Grimes trying to figure out a way to make it easier on Jalen Daniels to make throws without making mistakes. It's the defense needing to get a stop when they need to and not just folding and not having a team go on an 8-minute drive and then score.
I agree they're not executing, but at some point, like, just bad teams don't execute. Mm-hmm. If it's a one-off game, sure.
Bad teams find a way to lose.
And that's what's happening. We've seen it in NFL teams, and that's what's happening with the Jayhawks. Jaden Daniels does not see the field. Jalen, I'm sorry. Now we talked about Jaden earlier. Now I'm getting confused again. Yeah. I wish it was Jaden Daniels. They would not be struggling the way they are.
I still think there comes a time where you just got to play the kid Marshall and forget Cole Ballard. You got to play Marshall. Jalen Daniels ain't cutting it for you. See what you got, and then go on from there. Because there's no point in playing Jalen Daniels if it. What's the point of playing him if he's not
because there's
well?
So many people
it's
that
because
are
he's a senior and you want him to send him off well. Or whatever?
It's not about him individually. It's that there are so many people invested in the program, and even though we're talking about the season being done in the locker room with those that have financially committed to this season in a variety of ways, if you were to bench Jalen Daniels before October, that is throwing in the towel for the season, and that sends a terrible message as well. I think it's in the cards later in the year if this continues that we might be a week or two or three away from them doing that. I'm not surprised at all that they haven't bailed on Jalen Daniels. It's still September. We can talk about them not making a bowl game, and I don't think they will. But when you talk about the stadium project and all that kind of stuff, if you were just bail right away, I just think they're in a really crucial spot right now. They don't want to send that message yet.
We won't have a suite like Alex will have for the Kansas game. Sorry, coming up on Saturday. But don't forget joining us, and you can coming up in October when the Chiefs head out to Las Vegas to take on the Raiders. We'll be live from Stadium Swim Thursday and Friday from Circa. You can join us either during the shows during that time or Friday night. We're going to have a party at Overhang Bar with drink specials. Chance to win a pair of tickets to the game that Sunday. So you can come watch games over at Stadium Swim. Massive over 100-foot screen to watch the games on Thursday or Friday. World's largest sports book. Us at CircaLasVegas.com. We'll be out there. Gold's going to be a great time.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. Anytime
even though
Vegas,
we've been to Vegas, this will be my third time this year, and I'm still excited.
Yeah, this is number four. but this is going to be an unbelievable weekend for a variety of reasons. One, we go back to the city and the same stadium that the Chiefs just won a Super Bowl in. That in its own right is pretty cool. It's always become Arrowhead West anyway. And then when you go to Vegas, seriously, there's not a better place to be than Circa. They have the 143-foot screen and a pool side with six pools. They also have the world's largest sports book inside. And as you said, we're going to have a little party happy hour on that Friday night, plus doing our shows there earlier in the day. And we're giving away some tickets to the game as well. If you're going to be in Vegas, one, you should stay at Circa. But if for whatever reason, if you're not, join us poolside. Join us for the party. Chance to win some tickets. Yeah, we cannot wait to see you guys out there. Up next, let's get to the Chiefs Red half hour. One player that you think now could end up saving the Chiefs in one area. And then we get right back into why Mahomes just hasn't played like himself.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red half hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Reminder coming up at 1 o'clock today. Nate Taylor from The Athletic, our Chiefs insider, going to join us in studio for his weekly visit. Also, don't forget, coming up next Monday night, you can listen to the entire 2014 Wild Card. It'll be the 10-year anniversary. You can listen to the entire game plus the bottom of the 8th through the bottom of the 12th next Monday night, 7 to 9, right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. Hopefully, everybody's in a good mood and thinking about, oh, we're about to experience this again. Hopefully, that's the vibe.
I would love for us to be listening back to the wild card game, talking about the beginning of their wild card series. But yeah, tonight's going to need to all start tonight so that we can start feeling good about where this team's headed again.
All right, let's talk some Chiefs football, though. We'll get back into Patrick Mahomes here in a second and where his production has been. He admitted, like, he's off. He said he has to get back to his fundamentals, his base is off, and things like that. We'll get to that in about 8 minutes. But there's somebody else you actually think could end up saving this defense, especially if Charles Omenihu, when he comes back end of October or whatever, is not the same player that he was, where he had, what, six sacks after his suspension a year ago.
Yeah, I think that when I look back through it, what's been impressive about it, one, I could give a lot of credit to Brett Veach, who Turk Wharton was just on the street, and he was available for $2.3 million.
Yeah, they brought him
back. Nothing. Like, I mean, he was nothing. He was available for nothing. Turk Wharton is single-handedly going to save the Chiefs pass rush. And you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. He's not their best pass rusher. No, he's not. Great. Thanks for asking. The reason why he's going to save it is because Turk Wharton being dominant, which he has been, he's been very, very good on the inside of the interior pass rush, allows them to move Chris Jones around on third down, second down, effective passing downs to help out George Karlaftis, which is what they need. Truthfully, they're not that deep on pass rush. And unless Charles Omenihu comes back from a major injury and is an immediate impact guy, they need another pass rusher to make a difference. Turk Wharton's that man. And because he's been good on the interior, they get to use Chris Jones in varied spots. Chris Jones actually has not ranked in the top 10 in the NFL in pass rush rate yet this year. I think it's because he's playing a little more outside and he's getting used to it again. But the pass rush is still working okay because they have enough guys on the line. I think Turk Wharton's the single most, maybe it's going to end up going down is, I think Mike Edwards a couple of years ago, last year we would have said it's Drew Tranquil. I think by week 17, you and I are going to agree that Turk Wharton was the most underrated signing they made all offseason.
So I agree that the first 3 weeks have been really impressive from Turk Wharton. He's been a key piece. So we have to be careful. It's not just the sack numbers. It's the pressure, too, because sometimes we get so caught up, whether we're talking about any player on the defensive line, we get caught up on, oh, what's his sack total? That's just how we view whether they're great or not. You could end up with 5 sacks this year if you're Turk Wharton, or 4 sacks and have a huge impact this season. I think there's a chance Turk Wharton is this year, or this year's Mike Dana. Last year, I think
Mike Dana's been kind of a nice, solid player.
Dana had, what, 6.5 sacks?
Something like that.
A season ago, and has continued to improve basically every single year. And look, Mike Dana, to this point in time, he's getting more playing time than normal. I don't know if the numbers are going to be the same as they were a year ago. He has a half sack right now. He actually has the same amount of sacks as Turk Wharton. But yet here we are. We're saying, man, Turk Wharton looks more impactful. So it's not just the sacks, because if you just do that, you would say, well, Mike Dana and him have been the same. No, I think Turk Wharton's been better than Mike Dana so far to the start this season. The big wild card, if you're saying how do they elevate this pass rush, still is going to be when Omenihu comes back, what is his play? Because that is something we just don't know. You know, it's one thing last year he missed games due to suspension. Well, he was healthy. Now he's missing games because he's not healthy. And so is he able to come back from a knee injury and contribute? If he does, then suddenly that solves a lot of the potential issues that you could be worried about, plus just depth and injury concerns of other players. Because if not, I think what we're already seeing, we credit Spags, nobody's better at designing blitzes. They might have to blitz more than they would like to get pressure consistently.
Yeah, and they have to do that anyway, but Turk helps at least lower that number, doesn't he?
He does.
Because without him, where would their pass rush be? Like, and I know he's not their best pass rusher. I understand that Chris Jones is a better pass rusher. George Karlaftis is a better pass rusher. Hell, even from just a straight pass rushing standpoint, Dana is probably better. But what we're talking about is effectiveness on the defensive line, and they have needed Turk Wharton. He's also the kind of player, like we talk all the time about, like being patient with players and letting them develop. He's exactly the kind of player you should be doing that with. He was an undrafted free agent out of Missouri S&T. I mean, he was 22 years old coming out of a tech school. He wasn't supposed to play right away. He got on the field a little bit his rookie year, did some special teams, got on the field a little bit more his second year. So yeah, by the time he's 26, getting more playing time than ever from the interior, I'm not surprised to find out that the patience with Turk Wharton is paying off. What is great about it is Brett Veach found him in the first place as an undrafted free agent. And even better than that, because he was essentially a part-time player, even though he was in 17 games for the Chiefs last year, other teams didn't realize the value he actually possessed. They didn't realize that there was a hidden player out there. And I'm not saying he's he is the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th best player on defense, whatever. But his job has been undervalued in the early part of the season. And their pass rush has been mediocre, I would say. So without him, they'd be in an even worse spot. Thank God they brought him back for $2.5 million.
Yeah, really timely, timely acquisition just in terms of where it played out in the offseason. I think I'm trying to remember when exactly they re-signed. Like, how long was Tershawn Wharton sitting out there? Because there was a point in time where we thought they were going to lose a bunch of guys on the defensive line.
And they brought back Dan, and they
brought back everybody, kind of.
Yeah, I looked it up, by the way. He played 48% of the snaps his rookie year on defense, 45, 44, 37. He's pretty much the same player all 4 years he was in Kansas City. No pass rushers, right? Got to play Chris Jones on the outside more. He's played 75% of the snaps on defense this year, while chipping in more than ever on special teams too at 20%. So he's been a valuable player.
March 14th. They actually brought him back
early.
Free agency technically began what? February. The new league year was like March something.
But he's not a day one guy.
Yeah, so that was still earlier than I thought. I mean, but it got to a point where they started to see where the market was at. And, you know, yes, they moved on from Willie Gay in the linebacking spot. But yeah, they brought back multiple pieces, and so far it looks like a really smart approach and a really valuable signing for the Chiefs. All right, let's talk about the quarterback, though, Patrick Mahomes. He was honest, I thought, and you heard a little bit earlier, we were playing some audio about the way Patrick Mahomes spoke from Bill Belichick after the game, like in terms of acknowledging they won, but they don't think they're playing well. Patrick Mahomes said his fundamentals are off right now. He needs to get back to those. And when you look at his numbers this season compared to other quarterbacks, even in a down year, they're kind of middle of the road right now. And there's a lot of reasons for it. Probably some Mahomes just acknowledged him individually. I also wonder how much is this whole left tackle situation playing into it, the trust level, and will that build? Week one and two, it was Kingsley. It was just now Wanya Morris, who I thought was fine in the game, pretty solid on Sunday night against the Atlanta Falcons. It's going to be Wanya the rest of the way, or at least unless he gets hurt or something. So if Wanya can stack some games together, I think that will also help Mahomes' performance. Not just that, like, well, duh, he's not getting pressured. I'm talking about having trust, not worrying about your blind side or whatever.
Sure. Like, so I could see that would be a factor in here, or losing Hollywood Brown, a guy who should be there. But, I mean, right now the numbers are – I do not understand how they've managed to neuter Patrick Mahomes. He's the best quarterback in the NFL. He is currently – tied in the NFL for 25th with 20-plus yard completions. He has two. You know he's tied with? Andy Dalton, who literally just started a game for the first time last week, and Malik Willis. Do you know where he's in attempts over 20 yards? 26th, Gold. 26th. He has only attempted 5 passes that have traveled 20 air yards. At some point, we got to decide what's causing this. Because you and I both know it's not Patrick Mahomes' talent. Okay, let's just take that off the table. Is anyone, it's early, it's now been a year, and now is anyone willing to entertain that Matt Nagy bears some blame here? I'm just asking.
Yeah, that's possible.
I'm bringing it up because
I brought up what I did yesterday.
Patrick Mahomes has averaged 307 passing yards per game in his career under any other offensive coordinator not named Matt Nagy. Last year, he averaged 261, which is 50 yards below his average. This year, he's averaging 219, up 90 yards below his average. So in the 2 years Matt Nagy's been his offensive coordinator, it has not gone great. Like, now, you could just say that's no Tyreek, or you could say that he had no one to throw to last year, which definitely was a part of it.
That was my response to Drew yesterday. Drew said it was interesting, and then he backtracked a little bit and acted like he wasn't trying to make that point. But
I
basically,
said it was interesting.
Are we willing to bring up
that's
the Matt Nagy?
About it today.
He brought it up in the Tyreek, I think, example more than Nagy, but like both, sure.
Since Eric Bieniemy is left, Mahomes has 29 touchdowns and 18 picks.
You know what's funny?
But that's like, what I'm saying. Context is needed. It's not as simple. It's not as simple as
just
that.
Numbers
like,
out there.
Like,
sure.
Oh, here's the numbers. Must be Tyreek Hill's the reason why they've won.
I don't think that was the reason.
They've won two Super Bowls since. I think we can bring up. We did discuss Matt Nagy last year, by the way, when things were going the way they were. And context matters because you look at the wide receiver room from a year ago. Kadarius Toney was the team's number one wide receiver. For us to not bring that up, but just put a stat out.
Oh,
to
I know.
Me
I definitely
just,
brought it
I know
up.
You just did, but like. That would be wild. That would be crazy. So that's why I'm like, I just put a stat out and be like, well, that's really interesting. Let's have a conversation about it.
The consensus this year, though, is that the wide receiver room is better.
It is.
But it's
definitely better.
But he's worse. You just said than last year.
So it's weird because
3 weeks into the season, Drew, and they're 3-0.
Well, yeah.
I know, but to me, if this keeps going, does the conversation just go away? I mean, at what point do we look at the stat then? And because I said yesterday, before I said anything, I said, this doesn't mean anything right now. But later in the season, if this is still a thing and he still is only throwing for 220 yards, then I wonder if this is part of the conversation. I said that before I even brought up the stat. So I wonder, because the wide receiver room is better. I know Pacheco's gone, but does it become more of a conversation? That was my point yesterday. If it's week 10 and he still looks like this.
I do think, so I think we've, the wide receiver room is better. I'm not going to disagree with that sentence. I just said that earlier. It's not as much better as we pretend, okay? Rashee Rice was on the team last year. Travis Kelce was on the team last year. Sky Moore was on the team last year. Mecole Hardman was on the team last year. I mean, I'm just listing off.
The only difference is Xavier Worthy right now, actively. That is the
Justin
only difference.
Watson and Juju Smith and the corpse of Juju Smith-Schuster, okay? Like, he's not that old, but like, he hasn't been nearly as a productive a player. So Xavier Worthy's a difference. A rookie wide receiver in his first three games in the NFL. So, like, if he develops into something, then the wide receiver unit will look significantly better later in the season. And I think that that's why, obviously, they brought in Hollywood Brown. It would have been, infinitely better than last year's. But it's not like...
saying we said the wide receiver room is better. You're right. We said it about 100 times before they lost Hollywood Brown and Scarlett. You just did.
It's a lot of the
Xavier
same names.
Worthy is essentially the only new name actually that is currently active in playing for this team, unless you want to throw in Juju,
who is an upgrade
who had a touchdown on Sunday night. But if it wasn't for that one catch, none of you would even be trying to bring up Juju being the difference maker or something. So if you're saying last year that we acknowledged that it was a problem because of the wide receivers, and you're saying which one is it? Why are you saying the same thing this year? Because right now the wide receiver room really isn't much different. Rashee Rice is a better player, and offense is down across the NFL. So we're discussing Matt Nagy and like how much is it on him. No, I kind of disagree. Can it be a conversation? Sure, as the season goes on. But 3 weeks in, if we're all agreeing that offense is down across the league,
sure.
Why did we think the Chiefs would be the one outlier to that?
But they're not. They're not the outlier to that. They're in the same grouping. But even amongst teams who aren't having good offense because it's down, they straight up have no deep passing game again. Why? Like, I mean, maybe you think it's offensive line play.
Runs a 4-2.
Yeah, but I mean, they have no deep passing game.
And Rashee can go deep as well.
He's taken 5 passes over 20 yards. He has 2 completions over 20 yards. It ranks with Malik Willis. I mean, it's not like, and I'm not saying it's all Nagy. I am willing to wait out the rest of the season to kind of figure it out, because right now it is like, the positive I gave you in the beginning, I absolutely give you. They're 3-0. They are not playing their best football. Something looks kind of hinky in the offense, and I still can't figure it out. And some of it is the lack of deep passing game. All good. They're 3-0. Yeah, they're surviving it better than anyone else in the league by a mile. I am not here panicked. I am not here concerned. But it's weird that they're not better offensively. It doesn't make sense based on the talent I think they have.
We all watched the game on Sunday night. I know we all did. And we all saw, I don't know, I can think of 3 examples just real quickly, where Mahomes either underthrew or even when wide open Rashee Rice threw the ball to his right, let him out of bounds way too much. That's on Matt Nagy. You know what I'm saying?
He hasn't been as consistent.
That's not like what do you want your OC to do there? So I think Mahomes acknowledged it after the game. He's not sharp right now. So that's why I don't buy into it. It's on Nagy whatsoever with what we've seen so far. Not to mention going back, and someone brought it up on the text line, and it's fair. When Eric Bieniemy was the offensive coordinator, when people were defending Eric Bieniemy at times, they would say, well, Andy Reid's really calling the plays. People use that as a knock, actually, against EB. So now we're supposed to believe that Matt Nagy's just doing so much more with the offense than EB. No, this is Andy Reid calling plays. Ultimately, it's on Andy Reid to get this thing figured out. Matt Nagy is not calling the plays. We've gone through this whole thing 100 times. He is, yes, verbally saying the plays to Patrick Mahomes. He's not calling the plays. I put this so far 3 weeks in. This is on Patrick Mahomes, guys. He has not been sharp.
No, he's not been sharp. I would put it more on him probably than anything else, any other outside factor. But you and I, like, to say that people never wanted to give Eric Bieniemy credit, this show in particular tried to fight that. You and I both gave Eric Bieniemy credit. So, like, I'm not going to just ignore Matt Nagy's contribution to the offense either. He played a conservative offense in Chicago, and it seems like they're running a real conservative offense now. And they had to last year. They had no choice. But, I mean, they do have Xavier. They can technically try to schedule some deep routes and take a shot. And for the first 3 weeks, they're unwilling to do it. And I think part of it is because Patrick Mahomes' accuracy issues in particular have been very noticeable the first 3 weeks, and specifically in the game on Sunday, where you're like, there were like 4 throws where I'm like, yeah, Rashee Rice can catch that one that's back by his neck, but also like, dude, there's no one around. You could just hit him there. And the one where he threw to the boundary to Rashee Rice, who made the catch and they got the first down, you're like, he could have probably kept running. Like, I'm not saying Mahomes bears no.
Yeah, and they're, by the way, here, points per game, they're still 8th in the NFL. And that's our, that is, so like, they act, yeah, like they're,
no,
just
they
as
got
bad
plenty
like,
of room to
still,
go up.
They're actually still better already pacing by far than what they were a year ago. They were 14th or so.
God, I mean, 8th in the NFL. They're not even, they're scoring like 22 points a game.
Points per game they're at. And that's, again, that speaks to what I'm saying, like the rest of the NFL. The Chiefs are only at 25 points per game. It's tied with Green Bay. If they bumped up to even 26.3, they suddenly are the 5th best offense. That's where Washington, by the way, a lot of this is going to change. Washington is right there. The top team is Buffalo, 37.3. The Saints came crashing down to earth. They were 45 a week ago. They're 34.3.
I don't think any of the teams above Kansas City will finish other than, I think literally, like some other teams might jump behind them. I think only Buffalo will finish above them in points per game. They're above them right now. Maybe New Orleans, because they got like 40 points per game for the first three, so they get like a cushion. But does anybody think Arizona, Minnesota, Washington, Dallas are definitively finished better on offense than the Chiefs? Probably not. Again, I'm not panicked. I don't think it means it stops us from having a complicated conversation about 20 games now where Patrick Mahomes does not look like Patrick Mahomes. That's what stands out. He just hasn't looked like himself.
No, he hasn't. We're having a conversation. It's not as simple as just putting out a stat. We have to.
Oh no.
We have to talk about it, and it is virtually the same wide receiver room for those 20 games. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think I think if Hollywood Brown was in here and these numbers were the same, we'd be having a much more serious conversation. Yeah. Like, just very, very different conversation. Because, again, that's what it would look like.
All right, so earlier today, I guess it was Todd McShay. Usually it's draft season. I don't know why he's talking already. It's not even draft season yet. But Todd McShay was on ESPN with Ryan Russillo, and he was talking about Travis Kelce. We had a conversation yesterday about Kelce's performance. What is going on with him 3 weeks into the season? He's never really had a three-game stretch. Listen to what Todd McShay said about Kelce not being the same player, at least production-wise.
Are we not allowed to say that he's out of shape, that he's been partying all offseason? He's been jet-setting around with the most famous person probably in the entire world. The coverage and the respect he gets is the same. The athlete is not. Now, is he going to work himself into shape during the season? Yeah, I'm sure he will. He's an unbelievable competitor. He's one of the best to ever do it, but he's not the same guy right now. I'm not blaming it on Taylor Swift. I'm not blaming anything. All I'm saying is when you win two Super Bowls, you've got the whole tour that happens after the Super Bowl. There's no one else doing more commercials, I don't think, in the league. I mean, he and Mahomes are up there, but I think Kelce's doing more commercials and things. He's been at more events, doing more things socially. It's impossible to carry that schedule and still put in the same amount of time for football.
We're all searching for answers.
Wow, we're doing this now?
We're all searching for answers for why a future Hall of Fame greatest tight end in football is off to a slow three-game start. I think it's always laughable when, whether we did this with Mahomes or people did this with Mahomes a couple years ago, the whole commercial thing is always like, to me, it's the most idiotic complaint of like distraction. How many times do we have to say, do people think that
Mahomes is doing this on Super Bowl Sunday?
24 hours before the game, they're shooting the commercials. The commercials were shot in June or July for 3 days max. And we're acting like that's why.
I'm sure it was that long.
Right? Like, and not to mention the State Farm ones were shot right here in Kansas City. So like the commercial argument is the dumbest thing to me. Now you want to say, hey, the traveling and all that. Maybe, look, he's always been a partier. Maybe you're just saying he's older and so that has caught up to him. I guess. I have no way to prove that right or wrong. The commercial part is the stupidest, though. If I'm in 20 commercials, it has nothing to do with 4 months later when I'm playing football. They're not shooting the commercial. Patrick Mahomes isn't throwing a touchdown to Travis Kelce, and then Travis is running the locker room, and they're live streaming him in to do a live commercial during the game. That's not happening.
I think this is idiotic. Idiotic. What do you, I mean, so the 6 weeks?
He's probably aging. So that is true, but it's not about his schedule.
The 6 weeks he had for training camp, he couldn't get himself in shape by then?
Yeah.
What are we talking about here? Because he was on an airplane a few times? He's not dedicated to football? There's like videos of him working out in a hotel room. Travis Kelce, and I honestly think this about any Hall of Fame player. I do not think you are capable of being a Hall of Fame caliber player unless you are all the way in almost all the time. I think you can be extremely talented and play in the league a long time and just kind of like go on your God-given talent. But even Justin Verlander did that in his 20s. And then he got into his 30s and he was like, damn, I started looking at the scouting reports and that made a nice difference. You think Travis Kelce was never like looking at anything, working out while he was traveling? You just think he sat on his ass last 2 months because he went Sydney once?
He looked like it on the bench.
No, he just looked kind of bummed.
He looked sad and bummed out.
Because the game wasn't going well. But I think
would you rather have him throwing a helmet on the sideline? I mean, I don't know what the difference is. Like, he's obviously in a three-game stretch of production we've never seen before. We've discussed it for three straight weeks now, honestly.
Yeah.
I do think he's still been getting open. It is part of, back to our last conversation we just had. It's also a credit to the well, it's also a credit to the defenses. Like we were just going through, like, is it Matt Nagy's fault or whatever for the other stuff? There's a chance that, I don't know, maybe defenses deserve some credit along the way. He's also flying on a private jet. He's not like the three of us flying Southwest or flying Spirit back on a red eye after the Super Bowl, Cody, and landing at 5 a.m. and doing a show the next day a couple hours later. He's on a private jet when he travels. He's sleeping, I'm sure, pretty damn well on said private jet. He's eating at some of the best restaurants. I just think anytime somebody struggles, we all want to try to find answers. What the hell is going on? And it's very easy because of social media. He's so visible, so people will view anything. The most likely reason why he is struggling, number one, might just be the defense. Number two, yeah, he's getting older. It doesn't have to be that, oh, he just doesn't care. He's just, you know, fat and happy. He's, you know, he just is drinking Coors Lights all the time. But he was doing that a lot anyway.
I mean, I've seen off seasons with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce where every other video is, now they're in Lake Tahoe crushing beers. Then they're at the Post Malone concert playing beer pong till 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And Post Malone getting his name tattooed on his body. And then they're going to the next thing. And then yeah, maybe you didn't used to see the vacation in the Bahamas he was on because he wasn't dating Taylor Swift. But I'll just tell you right now, he was taking that vacation then too. He was absolutely taking it before. You just didn't know it because he wasn't dating the most famous pop star in the planet. Well, I just don't. This is a nothing deal for me. McShay is way off base on this. I don't care.
You can't act the same when you're 29 and then when you're 34 expect you to still have the same like recovery process.
I think
of
that's true.
So yeah. I think that's what Tom McShay is saying when he's like, look, he did all of this. He's older now, so it's taking him longer to really get into full football shape. Like it is for a lot of people this year in particular, as we've seen, that's it kind of shows up along with the other things that are there as well. He's trying the way that he's lived. He's doing it again. He's doing it still, but it wears on your body more when you're obviously 34, 35 than it does when you're 29 or 30.
Right. The Chiefs also like for the first time in 2 years have a legit number one wide receiver too. I think that's something that has to be acknowledged, that yep. Rashee Rice is the one that's eating wide open in the zone, finding the soft spot and getting open so quickly that Mahomes
yards anymore.
Is getting the ball out quick to Rice on a lot of these possessions.
Sure.
It's obviously something that we're going to keep discussing.
Text line does not like Todd McShay. Good
but it is hard,
man.
Because they've had number one wide receivers like Tyreek Hill
before. Evaluate the 2027 mock draft or something like that. Coming up next, we'll get to what's trending and then right back into the Royals and what is on the line tonight.